The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
Yeah, solicitor Miriam McGillicuddy is with us for The Legal Lowdown. Miriam, good morning to you and thanks for joining us again this month.
Good morning, Kerry, and good morning, listeners, on this glorious morning. We don't know ourselves with the blue skies.
We don't, whether we're heading to the beach or the bog. It's nice in both places, yeah. That's for sure. Okay, Miriam, we're going to get to queries that have come in and also queries that we didn't get a chance to get to last month when you were on with us. We'll start with this one. Please, can you ask Miriam about reciprocal enforcement of maintenance? I'm a local woman who recently returned from the UK to Kerry. My ex-husband refuses to pay maintenance for my daughter. He had paid previously in the UK through CSMA. Please ask Miriam.
Yeah, I mean, there is a very efficient maintenance recovery process cross-border that applies in certain countries. And the UK, the US, Australia would be some of the countries that have reciprocal maintenance enforcement arrangements. And they're quite effective. Now, the only thing is they do take time. So it's our central maintenance recovery unit in Dublin through the Department of Justice who routes those maintenance enforcements, and once there's an order out there, they'll apply to enforce it in the relevant country. Their email is mainrecov@justice.ie and they're based in Dublin. Now, what effectively happens is one applies here, maybe say one has an Irish court order, one applies here then to enforce it in the country abroad where the person is living. In this case, the lady has come from the UK to Kerry, so she has a UK court order, obviously, but she can apply in this jurisdiction to have that maintenance order enforced. She doesn't have to go to a UK solicitor. So if she qualifies for legal aid, she'll go to her local legal aid board and they'll apply for her, or otherwise any private solicitor would apply. There's a form one sends up to the department in Dublin and they then send it to the reciprocal unit in the UK who follows up on it. Unfortunately, it does take time.
Yeah,
and my experience
could this be where the problem is with this particular query? Maybe that's taken too long.
About a year now. Again, there is supplementary welfare and the social welfare system to help in the meantime, but again, it takes time. Now they will enforce all the arrears in the sense that often they can get a lump sum payment when it eventually comes through, and Jerry, they're quite tough. I mean, especially in other countries, like they'll go out, they'll find the person, they'll go for enforcement, and if that person doesn't pay it, they go to jail. So there's very strong enforcement mechanisms. And that applies throughout the EU as well, that maintenance recovery. So that, and as we've more mobile populations, it's very handy. Now, the only thing is it doesn't cover every country in the world.
Yeah,
and often someone will play cute and go to a country that they can't be enforced in. But as I say, most of Europe, all of Europe is covered in it. The European Economic Area, US is covered in it, and they're very strong at enforcement there on maintenance, and Australia as well. So hopefully this lady will be able to go, process the application. If she qualifies for legal aid, they will process it for her at minimal cost, and she will eventually see the arrears, but she needs to persist with it. That's the only thing.
Yeah.
It does take time.
Yeah. Okay. Another query. A listener's husband has passed away. They made a will 7 years ago, which sees their children getting an inheritance. Because he has died, does she have to update her will that they made together?
Yes. My condolences there. She would have made a will with her husband. They would have been presumably back-to-back wills, so they would have been mirror images of each other. So her will would provide that if she dies, everything goes to her husband. But if he dies before her, that then her children would get their inheritance. So strictly speaking, she doesn't have to change the will, but she might like to go into the solicitor maybe to revisit it. She could take out that section whereby it goes to the husband if she dies and just leave it that it goes to the children. So I suppose it might be no harm just to go into the solicitor to have a chat and make sure everything's in order and just maybe revise it slightly with the changed circumstances. But I must emphasise, she doesn't have to, because those mirror, mirror wills will usually provide for a situation for the estate going to the children as per both the husband and the wife's wishes.
Yeah.
But as we do advise people, I suppose, to update their will every 10 years.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have to. I suppose when she feels ready to, she could go in and have a chat with the solicitor. But and she may decide even after the chat she won't change it. That's up to herself.
Yeah. Okay. Another will related query here, Miriam. When someone dies, is there a time limit from when the will has to be read? Is there a requirement for the solicitor to inform all of the benefactors, or what is the role of the executor?
Yeah, the executor is the manager of the will, and they put the donor's wishes into effect, and they are in control of the will. So we don't really have will readings anymore. The executor usually comes into the solicitor. And
except in the movies, dramatic effect, Miriam.
That's right, Terry. And it's interesting that this reader would expect the will to be read in a formal reading with all the relatives around and all that. But we don't do that kind of dramatic interlude here usually, unless it's requested by the executor. The executor might like to have a reading of the will, a formal reading with all the beneficiaries present, which is a kind of a nice idea, really, for the, I suppose, the beneficiaries to meet and that. But it's not actually usually done. And often the executor would ask the solicitor to maybe send out a copy of the will to all the beneficiaries so they're aware of what's happening and they can keep in touch with the solicitor's office in relation to the progress of the probate and administration of the estate. But there's no the solicitor acts on the executor's instructions, so they can only send out the will if the executor says so. And an executor might say, I don't want a copy of the will to go out, in which case the beneficiaries won't be able to see it until it's actually made a public document, when it's actually probated and validated through the probate office. So I suppose for courtesy, politeness, openness, transparency, it would be important to encourage executors to actually notify all the beneficiaries, because otherwise it leaves people in the dark. And as you know, that's not a very good thing, and it can encourage all kinds of bad thoughts. So as a result, it would be a good thing for executors to make sure all the beneficiaries are aware of what's coming down the tracks and to give them a copy of the will.
Okay, we've more will-related questions, more queries to get to, Miriam. We'll get to those after we take these.
The Legal Lowdown on Kerry Today.
We're talking the Legal Lowdown, Miriam McGillicuddy. Miriam, a query in from somebody who says, can you ask, is it more beneficial and tax efficient for parents to transfer a property to their son during their lifetime or wait until probate after their death? Now, yeah. I'd imagine it doesn't matter in terms of the tax-free allowance that's on this, or the tax credits that are on it, but
exactly.
At the same time, you have to factor in, have you given them anything yet, or is there any change, really?
Yeah, well, I suppose lifetime transfers involve three taxes: stamp duty, CAT, the gift tax you spoke about there, the inheritance tax, which is exactly the same whether it's during the lifetime or after the death, and then capital gains tax. If it's their personal private residence, principal private residence, there'd be no CGT.
Yeah.
But you would have to pay stamp duty maybe on the value of the transfer at 1%. So in order to assess this, their best approach would be to get a valuation on the property, and they could look at,
then they know what they're dealing with,
exactly,
in terms of numbers,
how much it's going to cost to transfer it. Now, are they going to transfer a half interest only, so it'll go by survivorship on their death, or are they transferring the whole property? It depends on if they've any other property. As you said, has the son got other property? Is the tax threshold reached and all that? The reason a lot of people do this is for because of the fair deal, and to ensure that their son maybe gets the property without having to pay a fair deal charge. But the thing is that it could be quite expensive to do the transfer, bearing in mind the stamp duty. So one would weigh it up. Also, if the son, if everything is transferred to the son and there's nothing to get a grant of probate on, they're saving probate costs. So that's what they'd look at as well when they get a valuation on the property and assess whether it's better or not. I suppose we always say your home is your castle, yeah, and not to let it go until you're deceased.
Before you go.
Yes, yeah. Until you're well dead and buried. But people are doing transfers. I suppose once they do them within 5 years of the Fair Deal scheme, they can't be caught by the Fair Deal scheme. And they're doing transfers into joint names. They're doing transfers subject of the whole property, subject to their life interest and all that. So one, if they plan to do that, one would look at the various taxes and just assess the costs both ways, and then they can make a decision on it. But getting a valuation on the property would be the first step.
Yeah. Okay. Another query. What is the name of the form that must be filled out, Miriam, when a person dies and the other owner of the house wants to change the name or change it into their name?
It's a Form 47. It's a Talta Éireann form. And it's basically reciting on affidavit that the title number to the property, the folio number, and setting out the death of the other person and asking that their name be removed from the folio, and it's exhibiting a death certificate which they sign the back of. So that's the Form 47. As I say, can be done through themselves. I think the Talta Éireann do accept personal applications, or it can be done through the solicitor's office.
Yeah. Okay, myself and my husband have been told we will be left in his grandparents' house when his nan passes away. It's done in the way that's left to their daughter, who's my husband's mother, and for it to be given to us then to avoid paying a high tax rate. His uncle, who is the grandmother's son, has the potential to be difficult in this situation. Would he be able to go after the house when it's left to us and take it off us? Ask the query, ask the listener.
Yeah, this is the Section 117 action. I presume the grandmother has two children, the daughter and the uncle.
Yeah.
And if everything's, or the house being the main asset, is left to the daughter, the uncle could potentially have a Section 117 action to say
he could argue he wasn't provided for adequately in his mother's will.
Exactly, and that she hadn't acted as a just and prudent parent. Now, usually we do up a memo to say why one person is being benefited more than the other. Maybe the daughter is, and the grandchildren here are actually looking after the nan, and that might be a reason to give them the house, or maybe they need it as a residence. Maybe the uncle or son have their own house.
Yeah.
Very often, what people do in this situation is maybe do the transfer during their lifetime, and once it's not going by will or administration of the estate, there's no Section 117 action. So people actually divest themselves of property during their lifetime to avoid the Section 117, really, in certain situations. But yeah, it could be an issue. And obviously a solicitor who sees this kind of scenario would do up a memo explaining the nan's wishes as to why she's benefiting one child over another. And the other way to help out is maybe that the nan has other assets, and that she'd leave this house to the daughter, but that she'd leave the other assets to the uncle and adopt a fair approach in the situation.
That would avoid litigation.
Exactly.
That would cost them all that money.
That's exactly it, and diminish the value of the estate and the house, if that's the only asset.
Okay, another query comes in from a listener in Killarney. Says, if someone is married to a widow who has three grown-up children, but then her husband predeceases her, and she decides to leave their home to her nephew and niece, but will not mention her stepchildren, can the stepchildren dispute the will? I'd imagine they could.
It's a difficult one, because remember, if the house that they own is in joint names, if the husband dies, it goes to the spouse by survivorship.
Yeah.
So strictly speaking, she can leave it to whoever she wishes, And she doesn't, because they're her stepchildren and not her adopted children, she has no legal obligation to them. So if, for example, they're not properly provided for in the father's estate, that's when they might take the original Section 117 action. If, for example, the father left all the estate to his present spouse.
Oh, so the challenge may come there at that point, rather than waiting for her to leave it to anyone.
Exactly.
Niece and nephew otherwise.
She would have no legal obligation to, because they're not her biological or adopted children. So that's where the challenge might come.
Okay. A letter came in for you as well, Miriam. Dear Miriam, I always listen to your interesting slot on Radio Kerry. Myself and my husband are in our mid-60s with 5 grown-up children who are all married with families. I worry that we might need nursing home care in the future, but hopefully not, please God. Could we put our assets in a trust to qualify for the Fair Deal scheme, or what is the best way to go about this? Do you know of experts who deal with trusts and you think it's a good idea? That comes in from a fan of the show.
Yeah, thanks, listener. Very interesting query there. I suppose there's lots of different ways of looking at the Fair Deal scheme, and it depends on what assets you have. So a good idea to get advice and get solicitors and accountants' advice. And there's some very good accountants out there who look at things from a tax perspective and can advise adequately in relation to transfer of assets, etc. I suppose we don't use trusts a lot here in Ireland. I know they do use them a lot in the UK. And what a trust is it's where somebody settles property on a third party who then applies it for their benefit. But it's taking it out of their name. So strictly speaking, the listener is thinking this mightn't be assessed in the Fair Deal scheme or after their death in maybe an administration of estates. The reason we're not too keen on them in Ireland, I suppose, is that beneficial interests have to be declared on the Fair Deal scheme form and also in the revenue return after your death. And also revenue have a very good handle on these trusts, and a trust, if it's set up to be legal, has to be registered with the revenue commissioners, and there's tax on them of 6% initially
tax implications.
And 1% per annum. So it's not, I don't think it's as free as the trust situation in the UK. As a result, we usually only use trusts maybe for incapacitated children. And actually, once one sets up a trust for an incapacitated child and one puts in the right terminology, then it's tax-free for revenue purposes. But I suppose that's why a lot of lawyers in Ireland don't really use the trust scenario. We'd be much more inclined to look at maybe transfer of property into joint names, subject to life interest, transfer of property during the lifetime, and other vehicles. And obviously the transfer 5 years before the Fair Deal scheme in relation to asset transfer. At the end of the day, it would be important for this couple to get the advice. I mean, ideally you'd hold on to your own home, because the Fair Deal scheme can only take up to 22.5% of that home. And also you might like to, if you have to go, both of you have to go into a home, you might like to have the home so that you can rent it out to get extras for you and all that kind of thing. And that's going to be, you know, is allowed under the Fair Deal scheme. And it depends on the type of assets. If it's a farm, for example, there's certain, they can cap the charge on farms, provided you have a successor.
successor, yeah, not a in survivor. Place. And it doesn't affect that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So okay. Lots to consider.
But the trust can be done. And it's just that one has to be very careful about what one puts into the trust deed, make sure they're revocable. The terminology needs to be correct, and they need to be registered with the revenue commissioners in the quaintly named CRBOT, they call it, is the registration area for trusts. So one has to register it there as well. Usually, as I say, we only use them for charities, incapacitated children. We don't use them a lot in other areas, but obviously well worth looking into it.
Yeah. Okay, brilliant. Miriam, great stuff as always. Thanks very much for answering all those queries. We've lots of queries coming in on the Fair Deal. We'll get back to them next month, but thanks for talking to me.
Thanks, Jerry, and thank you, listeners, for all the queries. Have a great day.
Great stuff. Miriam McGillicuddy there, a solicitor for the Legal Lowdown.